Chapter 9, The Pattern. Asha Menon arrived at the community center with two folders, one hospital tablet, and the bad feeling that she had already lost the argument. Mina drove, because Asha's left hand had started cramping around imaginary instruments every time traffic slowed too quickly. Asha had objected to this assessment. Mina had put the keys in her pocket and waited until the objection ran out of air. The community center on Ash Street looked worse after sunrise. Not structurally. The brick held. The roof held. The basketball hoop above the old gym doors still hung straight enough for optimism. Daylight removed the mercy of emergency lighting. It showed the tape marks on the floor, the coffee stains, the donated clothes sorted badly in clear bins, the cot legs bending under people who had not learned how to sleep in a world that had moved on without them. It showed the trophy case by the wall and the rows of handwritten signs, counseling, family reunification, legal aid, medical questions, phones. There were too many questions, not enough categories. Asha stopped just inside the gym doors. Mina stopped beside her. "Still want authority?" Mina asked.
Asha looked at a volunteer helping an elderly returned man write his own address on a form, while the man kept insisting the street number had changed. It probably had. Half the city had changed. The city had been busy living, while he had been dust. "No," Asha said. "Good. I want a locked research unit, a bioethics board, federal coordination, legal guidance, sleep, and a normal Tuesday from before the universe started making clinical jokes." Mina nodded. "I'll see what the gym has in storage." Elias Crow stood near the trophy case with a clipboard in one hand and a roll of masking tape around his wrist. He was speaking to a woman in a cardigan who had been crying long enough to seem embarrassed by it. He did not hurry her. That was the first thing Asha noticed. Most disaster workers developed speed even when standing still. Elias had the opposite problem. He made waiting look like treatment. That made her distrust him immediately. He looked up before she said his name. "Dr. Menon?" He remembered her voice from the phone. Asha filed that away. "Mr. Crow?" "Elias, please." "No." Mina coughed once into her fist. Elias smiled. Asha disliked that too. "You came," he said. "I brought records." His eyes moved to the folders. "How many?"
"3 confirmed high-signal cases, several low-confidence reports, one impossible surgical outcome I am not ready to classify. Yours?" Asha did not answer. Mina did. "Do not diagnose my friend in a gym." Elias accepted that with a small nod. Too graceful. Too practiced. Asha opened the first folder against her palm. "Before we do anything else, we define terms. You used a word last night, misclaimed."
"Yes."
"Stop using it." A man on a cot nearby lifted his head. Elias lowered his voice.
"I have not used it publicly."
Asha looked at the room, at the cots, at the signs, at the volunteer near the phone table who had a stack of photocopied flyers half hidden under a sweatshirt. "You have used it somewhere." Elias followed her gaze. The volunteers saw them looking and quickly moved the sweatshirt. Mina said, "Subtle." Asha held out her hand. Elias took one flyer from the stack and gave it to her. "Have you dreamed of orange water? Do you remember a final second that was not yours? You may be misclaimed." There was a phone number at the bottom. Asha read it twice because anger made her want accuracy. "This is not acceptable. It is keeping people from thinking they are alone.
It is contaminating testimony. Doctor, the testimony was contaminated before they found me. By trauma. By the same event. You do not know that." "No," Elias said. "But I know the difference between a crowd repeating a rumor and strangers arriving with matching details they had no way to share." Asha hated that answer because it was close to her own conclusion. She handed the flyer to Mina. Mina read it and said, "This phone number is yours?" "Volunteer line," Elias said. "Who answers it?" "Whoever is free." "That is also not acceptable," Asha said. "I agree." That stopped her. Elias looked tired enough for the agreement to be real. "I made the flyer too soon," he said. "Then people started bringing us cases the hospital hadn't seen, and I did not know how to stop it without losing them." "You stop it by telling people to seek medical care." "We do, every time." "You are not equipped for this." "No," Elias said, "but neither are you." Mina made a small sound that meant fair. Asha ignored it. Mara Vale came in through the side door at 10:12 a.m., Dan Keen beside her.
Asha recognized Mara from the hospital photograph attached to the incident report. Paramedic uniform, damp hair, old badge, expression fixed between command and collapse. In person, Mara looked less dramatic and more dangerous, not threatening, competent, past the point of self-preservation. Dan looked like a man who had been told he was lucky by too many people who did not have to live in his body. He wore his wedding ring. Asha noticed because she noticed things that did not help. Elias stepped toward them. Mara stopped moving. So did Dan. It was subtle, a hesitation no longer than one breath. Asha might have missed it if she had not been watching for abnormal responses. Elias did not touch them. He did not speak yet. Still, Mara checked the exits and Dan pressed one hand to his sternum. Elias saw both. So did Asha. "That happens around you?" she asked. Elias did not look away from Mara. "Sometimes." "Define sometimes." "When they are close to the same signal." Asha wrote that down. Refusing to record it would not make it less real. Mara looked at the pen. "Are you the doctor?" "One of them." "That's not an answer." "No. It is a staffing condition." Dan gave a short laugh. It sounded like it hurt. Mara did not laugh. "You sent for us?"
Elias said, "I asked if you were willing to come. A man on the phone said you had other people who drew the water."
"We do."
Mara's jaw tightened. Asha watched the muscle move. "How many?" Mara asked. Elias looked at Asha. Asha said, "Confirmed cases or suggestive reports?" Mara's face changed very slightly. "That's the first thing anyone has said that didn't sound like a prayer." "I try not to pray during data collection." Dan said, "I appreciate that." Mina took two folding chairs from a stack and set them near the wall. Mara did not sit. Dan did. He put both hands on his knees and looked at Elias. "I heard Ray again this morning." The gym sounds thinned around the sentence, not stopped. The room kept breathing, tape tearing, a child crying near the coat bins, sneakers on the basketball floor, someone calling for a translator. But the people close enough to hear went still. Elias crouched so his eyes were level with Dan's. "What did he say?" Mara said, "Don't." Elias looked up. Mara's face had gone pale. "Don't ask him to perform it." Elias stood slowly. You're right." Asha wrote that down too. Not because it was medical,
because Elias had accepted correction without defending himself, and that made him harder to dismiss. Dan rubbed both hands over his face. He said the same thing. "Tell my girls, I tried. But this time, I knew something else." Mara's hand closed around the back of his chair. "What?" Dan looked at her, apologizing before he spoke. "He wasn't talking to me." Mara swallowed. Dan looked at the floor. "He was talking to you. He knew you would hear him, eventually." Mara's grip on the chair went white. Asha's notes rearranged themselves around a diagnosis no one had named. Not hallucination cluster. Not shared delusion. Signal transfer through death proximity cases. Case, definition, failure. She wrote the last phrase in the margin and underlined it once. On Tsar Ven's world, the Provisional Memory Council convened without ceremonial cloth. That was how Tsar knew they were frightened. Ceremonial cloth was for public certainty. Each strip named a role: witness, keeper, challenger, mourner, recorder. Without it, the council members looked like what they were: officials seated at a long table with dry mouths and too many reports. Tsar stood barefoot on the warm floor because she had refused the sandals they offered.
The chairwoman said, "Three more returned prisoners have described black water." Tsar said nothing. "Two were not in your holding block." Still nothing. "One was on the agricultural moon." Tsar looked up then. That irritated the chairwoman. "Good." "The prisoner was being executed?" "No. He was in a mining lift when the cable failed. The lift had begun to fall." Tsar's fingers closed at her sides. "Death already moving," she said. The recorder's stylus paused. The chairwoman did not like the phrase. Tsar liked that too. Another council member cleared his throat. "There is more. An off-world packet from a labor memorial site. A returned child spoke names, not listed in the official death register. The site authority tried to classify the event as civil agitation." "Of course they did. Tsar, authorities dislike dead people with witnesses." No one corrected her. That was new. The council member continued. "The child wrote names after reporting black water and orange light. Several names are not local." He slid a printed sheet across the table. The script was not Tsar's. A trade translation ran beneath it. Mara Vale. Elias Crow. Asha Menon. Tsar stared at the names. They meant nothing.
They meant the prison yard was not alone. She heard the old execution field for one breath. The crowd, the drones, the official voice saying her name as if a name could be owned by the state, then the black water behind it. "How many?" she asked. The chairwoman's mouth tightened. "We do not know." "Then say that. We do not know." Tsar nodded once. It was the first honest sentence the council had given her.
Harriet Solis, kitchen return, knees hurt before return, reports standing in water during sleep. No known death event in progress. "Low confidence," Asha said. Elias nodded. Mina continued. "Malik Ross, returned on bus platform, smelled smoke, no fire, repeated backward counting during sleep. Any death event? Not documented. Low confidence unless we find one," Elias said. "His mother reported a bus accident at that stop 2 minutes after he vanished." Asha looked up. "With casualties?" "One driver, not Malik." "Then not enough," Mara said. "Could be shared fatal event proximity." Asha looked at her. Mara shrugged. "You needed a phrase. That's the phrase." Asha wrote it down. "Jay Patel, bus platform, smelled smoke, same stop as Malik." Asha stopped writing. Elias did not move. Mara said, "There it is." Asha disliked how quietly she said it. Mina turned the page. "Luis Navarro, you already know. High confidence," Asha said. "E. Crow." Elias reached for the notebook. Mina moved it out of his reach. The table went silent. Asha looked at Mina. Mina looked back, eyebrows raised in a way that said, "I did not put this here." Mara looked at Elias.
Elias's face had not changed enough. A person with nothing to hide would have been confused. He looked controlled. Asha held out her hand for the notebook. Mina gave it to her. The entry was not complete. Only initials, no intake form, no phone number. E. Crow, orange water, backward count, final impact memory, pull direction east. Asher read it once, then again. Elias said, "That is private." Asher closed the notebook. "Most records are." Mara's voice was low. "You too?" Elias looked at her. For the first time since Asher had met him, he did not have the right answer ready. From somewhere near the coat bins, a young man called out, "That's the word from the flyer, right?" No one at the table answered. The young man held up a copy someone had left on a chair. "Misclaimed?" Several heads turned. Around Asha, people stopped watching Elias and started watching one another. The flyer had given them a label, and labels spread faster than discharge instructions.
Put that down, Asha said. The young man did not. What does it mean? He asked. Elias closed his eyes. Elias, Asha said. He opened them. Do not, her face told him. He looked sorry.
Then he turned toward the room. Ovak woke with ink on their fingers. Vesa was asleep on a bench 3 meters away, one arm over her face, boots still on. The old transit building was gray with early light. Outside, cloth strips moved on the hazard fence. Officials had not cut them down yet. That meant either mercy or exhaustion. Ovek sat up. The medical backing sheets had been gathered into careful stacks while they slept. Vesa's work. Names in one pile, directions in another, phrases in a third, words no one could translate, placed by themselves, away from the spilled broth and muddy boot prints. Ovek touched the top page. Elias Crow. The letters warmed under their fingers. Not heat. Recognition. Ovek pulled their hand back. A sound rose in their throat. They swallowed it before it became someone else's voice. On another sheet, written in a script Ovek did not know when awake, death was already there. Vesa stirred. Ovek? They are finding each other, Ovek said. Vesa pushed herself upright. Who? Ovek looked at the stacks. The dead were quiet this morning. Not gone. Waiting. The ones the water kept. Elias did not climb onto a chair. For that, Asha was grateful.
He stood on the gym floor among the cots and folding tables and half-sorted donations. His voice did not rise at first. People had to quiet themselves to hear him. That made it worse. Shouting could be dismissed as performance. This sounded like confession. We do not know enough, he said. Good, Asha thought. We do not know why some returned people are experiencing shared dreams, borrowed sensations, or memories that do not belong cleanly to one life. We do not know why certain cases involve a final second that was already in motion when the blip happened. Aisha's hand tightened around her pen. Too much. Too clear. But we know this is not only grief, Elias said, and it is not only madness. Someone began to cry, not loudly. Aisha did not turn to see who. There are people in this room who came back carrying more than their own fear, Elias said. Some of you hear a siren that is not sounding. Some of you smell smoke where nothing burns. Some of you wake with another person's last words in your mouth. Some of you dream the same shore. Mara stared at the floor. Dan had come back from the hallway. He stood just inside the doors with his phone still in his hand. Mina whispered, "This is going to spread." Aisha said, "It already has." Elias continued,
I used a word because I needed a place to put what was happening. It may be wrong. It may be incomplete. Dr. Menon will probably tell me it is clinically irresponsible. I will, Asha said. A few people laughed because they needed permission to breathe. Elias smiled faintly. She should, but for now, until we know better, I am calling this what it feels like. His hand moved to his chest. Only for a second. Asha saw it. Mara saw it. Dan saw it. Not chosen, Elias said. Not cursed. Not holy. The room held still. Misclaimed. The word passed through the gym. Not as a chant. Not yet. It sounded like recognition. A woman near the water table repeated it under her breath. Malik's mother whispered it once and covered her mouth. A volunteer wrote it on the back of her own hand before she seemed to realize what she was doing. Asha wanted to stop the word. She also knew it had reached the people who needed it. It had stuck. Elias looked at Mara, then at Asha. We were taken from a death already reaching for us, he said. Asha went cold. We. He had said we. Elias corrected himself too late. You were returned before that claim could finish.
Mara's face had gone blank in the way trained people went blank when the emergency was inside the room. Asha opened Elias's notebook again. He moved toward her. Doctor. She turned the page with the E. Crow entry. Below the first line, in smaller writing, half covered by his thumbprint, was one more note. Not counselor. Case. Asha looked up. Elias met her eyes. For 1 second, the kind man at the community center looked less like a counselor than a patient who had learned to stand where the nurses stood. Behind his careful face was the same orange horizon the others had seen, burning low over black water. Something in him had been looking at it for far longer than he wanted anyone to know. Then Harriet Solis said the word again. Misclaimed. This time, three people answered.